you're fired. And in case you even thought of not tuning in, here are some previews of the rest of the season that will finish with the November Midterm Madness. The Super Sucking Up Contest, featuring various righter-than-right-wingers who want the former real estate developer to campaign for them. Watch as they compete to see who can create the most powerful suction noise. The sparks fly when intra-party brawls break out between cabinet members trying to top each other by blaming Hillary Clinton for everything the president is accused of. From Russian collusion to separating immigrant children from their mothers. And in a shocking twist, you'll never guess which disgraced and ousted staff member makes an inspirational and tearful return. Meanwhile, in the wings, Vice President Mike Pence waits to be handed a rose. You gotta admit, it's never boring. Just don't be surprised if and when the master game player dangles the ultimate cliffhanger, nuclear war. You don't want to miss that episode. The First Lady may even make an appearance. No, probably not. For KZFR Radio, I'm Will Durst.
All right. My name is Isaac Hempseed, and this is Youth for Justice. We're on KZFR 90.1 FM Chico, listener-supported community radio from the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. The opinions voiced on this program do not necessarily represent the views or opinions of KZFR, its staff, board of directors, underwriters, or volunteers. Hello, Michelle.
Hi. Hi, everyone. Michelle here. I just want to say, school's out, guys. I know school's graduating this week and going out for the summer, but Youth for Justice doesn't take a break, so you may be out, but know that there's still things happening.
Here's Alice Cooper. School's out for the summer. hope that got some of you students out there ready for a busy, productive summer. Hope you're all doing good this June 2018.
Class of 2018 graduation. Yeah.
Congratulations, all of you.
Yeah. This will be the first time voting for some of y'all because you're just turning 18 or about to turn 18. Speaking of that, we just had a primary election, didn't we?
Yep. On Tuesday, most of the primary, all of the primaries were chosen. Some of them, there wasn't. So when you vote in a primary election, if one of the candidates gets more than 50%, they don't even have to do it in the November election.
Yeah.
So some of them did that, but
for the most part, not so much.
Yeah, the position that I'm most interested in this time on the primaries actually did not have someone not have to go through the regular election, which was the superintendent of public instruction, which we'll get into later on today. Okay. But first, let's start off on the governor.
Let's talk about him. Let's do it.
Yeah. Oh, hi, Moses.
Oh, hey, what's up, y'all? I'm here, too. It's Moses Salgado, co-host of Youth for Justice on KZFR Radio.
Howdy, howdy.
So the governor primary, results are in for Butte County. John H. Cox, Republican from Butte County, got 34.18% of the vote.
From the state.
In the state. And then Gavin Newsom, the Democrat, got 26.62%.
Yeah.
And those are the two candidates you'll get to vote for in November.
So
we can talk about that. What I did today was pulled up all the Butte County specific numbers, and I pulled up the top five for each position, so I can read those off for the governor primary in Butte County. And as was said, John Cox, the Republican, got 34.18% of Butte County's votes, followed by Gavin Newsom. He got 26.62% of the vote, so about 8% less, but that is only in Butte County. Overall, in the whole state, Gavin Newsom was pretty far ahead, I believe.
Yeah, I believe that. When I looked it up, Gavin Newsom was one for the state for the primaries, but doesn't necessarily mean that he'll win in November, but looking good, and I honestly will say that I hope he does win. I thought it was really cool to see that in the top five for Butte County that was Delaine Easton. Yeah, yep. She ended up being number four in Butte County, and I thought that was pretty cool. She was a very strong woman candidate for governor, very progressive.
Anything else about the governor primary that we want to touch on before we head on to the lieutenant governor primary position?
No, I was just looking up some of the results, and yeah, Gavin Newsom takes first place by a pretty big margin.
Yeah, he definitely did.
Yeah,
he was kind of a front runner the whole time.
But nonetheless, they're still going to have to compete within the.
Definitely. He didn't win by more than 50%, so he is definitely. It would just be between him and John Cox, who I don't really know that much about. Does anyone know much about John Cox?
I think he got a Trump endorsement.
Oh, okay.
Well, that's cool.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Our president loves him. Great.
So that's something to think about. If you're for that, then you're for that. If you're not, then think about that.
All right. So lieutenant governor primary, which Newsom actually was the
lieutenant governor. Yeah, under Brown.
So he's not running for this, obviously, but in Butte County,
he wants them both.
The Republican Cole Harris took 21.7% of the whole county of Butte, followed by that two actual people who will be on the lieutenant governor election in November, whom are.
Are you trying to hear a name?
Can you do it?
This is who I voted for. So, is Eleni Kunalaski? Lasky?
Okay.
Laskis? I don't know. I'm so sorry. Anyone that can call in and tell me that I butchered that name, I didn't mean to. And then Ed Hernandez is. So, we got two Democratic lieutenant governors in the primary. So, they're both Democratic. Democrat, sorry. I don't know much about Ed Hernandez, but I know that Eleni, I think is endorsed by Kamala Harris, I believe.
Okay. And she's our U.S. Senator now?
She was a former Attorney General of the state of California, to my knowledge. Okay. And then
now she's...
And then in the last election, she became the U.S. Senator for California,
yeah.
It's her and Nancy Pelosi.
So, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So. And just so people know what the lieutenant governor is, the lieutenant governor is basically like the vice president of the state, although California is one of the few states that still actually votes for their governor and their lieutenant governor separately. And there's been a few times where it's been a governor and a lieutenant governor from different parties. There is...
That's kind of cool, though.
Yeah. There's... I don't know what the new correct term is, but there's been a gentleman's agreement between the governor and lieutenant governor, if they're from different parties, that the lieutenant governor won't do anything that they think the governor wouldn't do, because when the governor's out of the state of California, the lieutenant governor can do anything that the governor does.
Oh.
So there's been that agreement, but there's even been talk about making it so the governor and the lieutenant governor are on the same ticket instead of splitting it up.
Wow.
It's kind of a cool, like,
cool
check on power and balance.
I kind of like that, too, because it does definitely, like, makes for a really cool dinner table conversation of politics. Like, they really kind of battle each other, and that's kind of cool. Like, sometimes, you know.
Absolutely. I think it requires them to kind of get a window into what the other party's thinking,
yeah,
and to be considerate of those ideals and those values that they have.
Yeah, definitely.
So it's definitely must be a challenging position to be in if you're the governor or lieutenant governor and your colleague is on an opposing party that you work directly with on a lot of different
definitely.
Issues. So yeah, no, that's fascinating.
And it's cool to see how they kind of align on things, too, because people might think that you're from two different parties, but you can't have similar views on things.
Yeah, I'd also like to see what the campaign finance for those individuals are and see if they, you know, have similar donors in any way.
Oh, yeah. You know what I really liked about, so I don't know if you guys got your voting packet in the mail and it talked about all their description and stuff. Well, they put their own, you know, description on for candidacy. And a lot of them this time were saying, don't take any, like, corporate money, no donors, no this and that. And I thought that was pretty cool that was, like, a big thing that was spelled out this year. Because that's very important to people nowadays, is kind of seeing, like, the control from businesses and corporations that kind of donate their money so they can kind of take power of the candidate and stuff.
Yeah.
Like, I know Big Tobacco does that a lot. So... Yeah, so that's cool. Yeah, so then we also have the Secretary of State. And the current Secretary of State is Alex Padilla. And he won for Butte County. He got 40% of the vote, so that the current Secretary of State is currently pulling forward winning. But he'll be going against Mark Muser, who's a Republican for Secretary of State in the primary. Those are the two candidates for the November election.
And in Butte, that was by 500 votes, about.
Wow.
Yeah, that was pretty split. That's crazy.
It shows how important it is to vote in your own district. And
yeah.
Just to, like, make your voice heard, because literally the margin is 500 people, which is tiny when you really
consider
it.
Yeah, think about
500 people does seem like a lot, and depending on the context of the situation, it could be. But in the bigger picture, when it comes to elections, 500 people really does make a difference.
Yeah, imagine if you told all your friends to vote and everyone voted. And it was nice to see in this election, being kind of on the younger side, seeing all of my friends, like, posting on social media that they were voting. I thought that was so beautiful, because I feel like it was a big election for young people to kind of show up.
What's interesting is, for me, like, I saw a couple people make some, like, posts on Instagram and other social media platforms, but it wasn't nearly enough. Or as many as I was anticipating.
Yeah.
It's, and it also depends on your friend group.
I think it's a friend group, too, yeah. Like, my friend, yeah.
Yeah, I saw a couple people, and I was like, oh, wow, thank you. Like, I appreciate you, you know, informing other people that this is something that's important.
Definitely.
But, yeah.
I commented back on every single person, even if it was someone I didn't, like, talk to regularly, if they had posted on their story on their Instagram that they had voted or they were going to vote. I literally just, like, reached out and, like, said, thank you. It's really important, and I applaud you for that.
Yeah, totally.
But, yeah, so also something with the Secretary of State, I think Isaac and I were talking about earlier. So in Butte County, the fifth candidate for Secretary of State was Gail Lightfoot, who is a libertarian, right?
Yeah, so that's the highest position, if you will, that you were able to vote for this primary, where a third party candidate actually made it into the top five.
Yeah, so that's a big deal. That's pretty big.
And she's a female, and you think you know she's slow or something like that?
She's from a Royal Grande area, so yeah, that's Luis Obispo area.
Yeah, San Luis Obispo area.
Yeah.
That's like Central Bay.
Yeah, so I know she's, that's cool. And also this, third party candidate, interesting. Especially in our area, there's a lot of libertarians, so that makes sense.
Yeah, it was 3.63%. 13 total votes. So, yeah, nothing to sneeze at, I guess.
It was 13 votes?
Yeah. 1,313.
Okay, wow. That's an odd number. That's really weird. 13-13.
Yeah. Kind of unlucky.
13-13.
Maybe.
Yeah.
maybe unlucky. We'll see. We're going to do a quick underwriter. So Youth for Justice is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by Friends of the Arts, a state local partner to the California Arts Council. Since 2001, Deborah Lucero and Friends of the Arts have been creating economic opportunity through arts and culture by producing community festivals and events, including Arttoberfest, the True North Tour, the NorCal Jazz Festival, the Salmon Festival, and more. To learn more about Friends of the Arts, visit friendsoftheartsupstate.org. And by Affordable Automotive, locally owned by Mike Button and the family since 1996, Affordable Automotive grows their business one customer at a time, repairing or maintaining any car, truck, or SUV, ensuring a safe and reliable vehicle at 2106 Park Ave in Chico, with financing available. Appointments by calling 892-1774 and at chicoautomotive.com. Voted best in Chico the last 5 years in a row.
Wow.
Thank you, Moses. And you just told us who won District 2 in Butte County for Butte County Board of Supervisors, Deborah Lucero.
Oh, wow. So Deborah Lucero won for the County Board of Supervisors?
Yep. She did.
Awesome. Awesome.
Yeah.
Sweet.
Tammy
Wall
was three. She beat Wall.
Yeah. Lucero beat Wall, Larry and, Wall, who was the incumbent.
Yeah.
And Tammy
Ritter.
Tammy.
Is this for the primary?
It was an open seat from Maureen Kirk. I'm sorry?
Is this for the primary for the County Board of Supervisors, or is this settle it?
It's settled.
It's settled, yeah.
Wow.
Locally, yeah.
Interesting.
So, yeah, Deb Lucero and Tammy Ritter are our county supervisors for our District 1 and 2.
Yeah, the way the primaries work is anyone that gets a majority vote, and if there's less than two, if there's two more less candidates, if there's two candidates or less, it's primary kind of defines who it is. Like the district attorney, there was just one and a write-in.
Yeah.
So it was Lucero against Wall.
Yeah.
So that was decided in the primary.
Wow.
Thanks, Bill. Awesome. Yeah.
So now is it three Democrats on the Board of Supervisors for this county, or is it?
I don't think they actually tell their party preference.
Okay.
But I believe that's the way it's leaning.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Wow. So three and four.
But for U.S. Representative LaMalfa and Audrey Denny are going to be voted on in November. They won the primary, so for a representative. So we'll either keep with LaMalfa or hopefully get some new blood in there with Audrey.
Yeah.
She was my teacher in Plant Science 101.
Wow. I had that class, too.
Her and another professor who was really into Legos. It was a good class.
Yeah, nice.
So, cool. Talking about Legos, let's get the Jackson 5 Plan ABC for a little musical break. Thank you. Youth for Justice.
I think this is probably the first time this record has been played on the air and is about to be released. Is this thing called ABC?
Yes.
Ladies and gentlemen, would you greet the Jackson 5?
Simple as though.
Hello, fans and audience. This is KZFR's Youth for Justice. We're back on the radio. Hope you enjoyed some of that Jackson 5 ABC.
Oh, yeah.
Some good vibes on this beautiful Thursday afternoon in Chico, California.
I was dancing, were you?
Oh, I was getting boogie.
Oh, yeah.
I was getting jiggy over here. It was a good time.
He can hit some high notes there,
right? Oh, absolutely.
Definitely.
Yeah. I can hit some high notes, but maybe after hours.
Oh, gosh.
All right. So.
Good way to segue out of that. I'm just kidding.
The next position I figure we'll talk about during this primary election that just happened on Tuesday is the controller. The top contendant in Butte County was Betty Yee. She got 52.56% of the votes, and Roditis got 42.19% of the votes.
You weren't trying to say that first name, huh?
Constantinos?
Constantinos?
Constantinos Roditis.
Yeah, that was a pretty well-matched contender, too. Look at that. They're pretty close.
And just to note, these numbers are just for Butte County, so even though she did get 50% or more in our county, she didn't get it on the whole state, so they are still going against each other for that controller position.
And you want to explain why this is so important?
Sure.
Yeah.
So what the controller is when you read the article on it that I read, it kind of sounds like a treasurer, but the state treasurer actually is more the one who keeps account of where all the money is being spent. The controller, with and as a part of the Board of Equalization, is actually the entity that kind of divvies up where all this money goes.
They're essentially the voting members on a board that delegate where monetary spending happens in California, whereas the treasurer is the one that kind of monitors it. They're the ones who actually make the financial decisions about what other institutions get funded and how much they get funded within California.
And this is where kind of people pull their hair out, because they're always like, hey, and when I vote on this tax, I always want to know where the money goes, and sometimes it's written in where the monies go, but the Board of Equalization can change where that goes, because I know that happened with Prop 56. You guys know I talk about tobacco a lot. I work for the American Lung Association.
All right.
But yeah, sorry, plug. But yeah, so for Prop 56, we had to fight them back because it was written in there that the money went to education and to all these other places, and they were kind of trying to push that money somewhere else, and that wasn't what the tax was written in to be. And that's what the voters voted on, is for it to go to the specific purpose of, you know, going to, like, I don't know if you guys, but like First Five is funded by Prop 56 and Prop 99, so like places like that for like childhood education and stuff like that. So I know a lot of people get really frustrated with taxing because they don't know where their money's going, and these are the people that control where your money's going. So this is why this position is really important.
Hence the name controller. So
yeah,
this thing's like, it seems kind of nebulous and a little abstract when it's discussed, but after you start, you know, looking at the pieces of the puzzle and start putting the jigsaw together, and you get a good border around it, you can start seeing where all these pieces fall into place, and it starts making sense in a more cohesive visual manner. So yeah, the controller controls where money goes.
Yeah.
And they sit on the Board of Equalizers, or Equalization, and they're one of the voting members. So it's a really significant position within California that often gets overlooked because it has a technocratic and boring name.
Yeah, I didn't really know much before I started looking into it. I was like, okay, what am I voting on now? Because this was, honestly, it's sad. I always talk about voting and stuff, but this is my first primary election I voted on.
Wow.
Yeah, which is really sad to say. But I always vote on, like, the major ones. But I was always that kind of person, like, why does it matter? I'll just vote when it comes down to it at the end. But it really does matter, because you get rid of some candidates and maybe, like, were more what you wanted, but they didn't kind of pull through. So this is why it's super important, the primary, because you're narrowing it down to two, but there were so many people on the ballot this time.
Oh, absolutely.
You see how many pages of people there were? There was crazy amounts of people.
Ridiculous.
There was like 20 people.
It was like when Schwarzenegger ran. It was like
Yeah. So many people running.
The first page was almost completely full, and I remember last time I voted in the primaries in 2016.
Yeah.
It was a much different picture.
Yeah.
And I was just, but there was a lot more propositions in 2016, too.
Yeah, there wasn't as many propositions.
There's maybe five here?
This time, and they were a little more confusing. I really had to research them. They were not, like, very straight up and glamorous as like, other ones. Not that they need to be glamorous, but like, the weed one and, like, ones on things like that. People were like, I want to vote for that. Like, these ones were about, like, your tax money and stuff, which are important. But people are like,
Absolutely. What I always do is just go to opensecrets.org and I just check out where the donor is coming from for each proposition. And I don't even pay attention to the party. I just pay attention to the organization or association that contributes money to whatever cause, whether it's in support and against.
Look into who endorses it, too.
Yeah, they endorse it.
Because I know the American Lung Association endorsed one of the propositions, and I was like, okay, well, yeah.
Yeah. So significant positions that are often overlooked, but we should always be vigilant about and concerned with.
Yeah, and I thought, I will say my little cute story that I was telling Isaac earlier. So when I was voting next to this lady that brought her two little kids in. They were two little daughters. They were probably like 5 and 3. And it was so cute because she was going over everything with them. She's like, so this is voting, it's really important, and then she was going over every candidate. She's like, this candidate, this is what they're in charge of, this is why it's important, and this is what they do. We vote on them because they do this. And she was explaining it to her kids, and I thought it was so beautiful.
That's freaking awesome.
Yeah. And she was just like going over everyone. She's like, local elections matter because local power is everything, because your representatives, you know, I know if you know this, but California was a big primary this year because we can overturn, you know, the House and Senate
the House of Representatives. We have a lot of Republicans in the House of Representatives, and this year that really matters because there's I think a majority of people in the House are up for re-election this year, and California has a lot of representatives.
Yep.
So it's incredibly important to do that.
And exactly.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to get the census to see like what the different age groups and how many of them were voted and how many registered voters vote, because a lot of people who are registered vote either forget or just don't vote when the time comes.
Especially in the primaries. It's very an apathetic thing for sure. A lot of people didn't understand it, didn't think it was important. And I think a lot of it came with the younger people, as it was a little harder to get them to turn out.
Yeah, for me, like, this election really showed me how important it is to do your research.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you're like, I don't care about this position, I'm not even going to vote for it, you should probably know what these people who have a lot of control over your lives are doing.
Yep.
So even if you don't care who the controller is going to be in California, you should know what this person is doing, what they can do to affect your life, what they can do to affect everyone's life, what they can do to affect the earth, you know?
Yeah.
Like,
just be aware.
Even if you don't believe in voting, learn about all this stuff, because you're not going to be able to change anything if you don't know what's going on.
Exactly. And people always say, like, oh, I don't want to vote because I don't like the candidates. But it's, you know,
it's not a matter of who you like and don't like. It's not a matter of who you like. It's a matter of who you don't like. So
even
if you don't like a candidate, pick the candidate that you like the most or you don't like the least.
Yeah, and then me and Isaac get into battles about this all the time because he throws his vote away to like candidates that aren't gonna like get anywhere, but I don't like doing that because then you're throwing away your vote to someone that you know is not gonna win where it could go.
It gets polarized even within groups of people who agree with each other, but I always look at it and I'm like, who has the highest likelihood of winning? I like winners, and that's who I vote for.
I rarely vote.
I know them, if I personally know the person, or I know someone who knows them, because like I saw someone on the ballot and I know her husband, and I was like, well, he's a really cool guy, so I was like, okay, I'll vote for her instead of this person.
Yeah,
and I did, and they lost, they didn't make it to the primary.
Yeah, so that makes sense, but he always votes for
the underdog. I respect it,
but at the same time, like,
you gotta vote for Vermin Supreme.
But this election is so important with the primaries in California.
So what's your feelings towards, you know, me personally, I did not vote for the district attorney, Mike Ramsey. He was the only person on the ballot, so I wrote in my own name.
I wrote in for a lot of them, because there was with him and the sheriff and the superintendent.
Yep.
There was no one running against him, and I personally didn't like any three of the candidates. So I saw on Facebook, actually, Bill, I saw you do this. I wrote in Desmond Phillips for Mike Ramsey. Yeah. So, things like that, when there's not very many. There was a lot of write-in candidates, too, for under him, right?
So, for the district attorney, Michael J. Ramsey.
Ooh, official.
Just like our president. Another middle name, J. He got 26,378 votes only in Butte County because
that's only where he is. Yeah.
And that was only 92.6%. There were no other people on the ballot, like you said, but write-in votes, 2,109. 7.4% of the vote was write-in votes. Unfortunately, the county's website doesn't show who those write-in people are, and I actually did some research on that. Does your vote get counted if you write in a joke candidate or any candidate, really? And it depends on the county. Some counties will keep track of and tally up every name, even if it's Ronald McDonald. Like, they'll put that name and then how many. Other counties, basically, you're throwing your vote away if you write in a candidate.
Wow. I would rather have thrown my vote away, honestly, though. And I know that sounds hypocritical because I was just talking about, like, voting for not third party. But for this case, when it's just a write-in, like, when there's only one option and you really do not like the person running, like...
When you, like, morally...
I morally would not vote for Mike Ramsey, yeah.
So, but you said there was 2,000... It was a 7% of the vote that was that wrote in. That's some food for thought to consider that if there was some sort of coalition or cohesive group in opposition to Mike Ramsey to run against him... what those 2,000 people who did write in their vote, what they could have mobilized and who they could have proposed to run against Mike Ramsey instead, and the political advocacy that they could have done in support of those that other candidate if they did unify.
Especially since, like, he's been in office for, what, 30-plus years?
He's been 27. This is probably going to be his 28th year.
Yeah.
He's going to bring home a huge pension.
Pretty sure he's the longest-running DA in the state right now, even.
Yeah. So he's been in there for a long time. He has a lot of sway and pull within Butte County politics, and he has a lot of influence in what happens here.
He does have a lot of influence in what happens here.
So it's just, you know, to keep that in consideration for the following year if he does run again as an incumbent.
I this is a personal anecdote. A friend was telling me the other day that he came into her criminal justice class, and one of the quotes he started with was from the guy from the LA riots, the guy that fled from the LA riots that was running in LA, and I thought that was funny that he started with a quote from the guy from the LA riots when it was.
Can't we all just get along with each other? That one?
I can't remember. I wish I had known.
That was after Rodney King, right?
Rodney King.
That was right after. It wasn't Rodney King, though. Okay. No. It wasn't a Rodney King. It was the guy that I think was the mayor of L.A. or something. Mm. And he ended up having to flood the scene because people, pushed him out. So.
Some irony.
Yeah, I thought it was ironic when she told me. I laughed. I was like, that's crazy.
And bringing up another fact about our district attorney, he is the district attorney, he's the district attorney in all of California that has moved the most percent-wise youth offenders into adult offenders. So that has to do with youth injustice.
Yeah. Absolutely. That's something we should definitely do some more reports on and monitor more, is to just recognize how many young people in the criminal justice system end up being tried as adults. Even if they're 15, 16, 17. And just to be aware of that and understand the implications that has on our community and our society.
Definitely.
And, you know, if you really want to, like, you know, sell it to somebody, you know, relate the economic impact of that and how it really disparately impacts these people.
Oh yeah, definitely. You can look at like some places that maybe, like, even in Orville, like,
absolutely,
especially with
Orville.
And like the opioid epidemic and everything like that, we have a big problem here, and I think a lot of times they treat youth that use these products as criminals.
Speaking of criminals, our sheriff coroner position was also chosen Tuesday. Corey L. Honey.
He's Sheriff Honey.
Okay.
Yeah.
He won with 98.55% of the votes.
Running unopposed.
And running unopposed.
He's an incumbent. He's been around for a while now.
Almost 31,000 votes for him. Write-in votes got 453.1 45%, and Tyler Rushing was one of the write-in names.
Yeah.
He was the other, one of the other people that the Chico Police Department killed downtown Chico.
I just was going to add the irony. I actually wrote in Scott Rushing. That wasn't the irony part. I just think it's ironic that the sheriff was running for both sheriff and coroner. You click the same box.
I'm pretty sure that's
kind of creepy.
It is a different thing for our county. Like, most counties have those two positions separate.
Separate, huh?
And it makes sense, because if you're investigating a murder that happens...
A police murder in particular is really what it is. If a police officer kills somebody in the line of duty, you want to be confident that the investigation... and the coroner's report is not compromised or jeopardized by somebody who may have a conflict of interest within the department. Because a lot of these sheriffs and officers, they're not, like, they don't just go to work and leave. Like, they have relationships with each other. They build relationships. They understand each other. They go to family barbecues. They have family, you know, they are a family in and of themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And so having the sheriff and the coroner be the same person raises an eyebrow,
yeah,
to say the least. A red flag, at the very least.
Yeah.
So it's concerning.
All right. Let's get back to some state elections. We just went over a bunch of local positions. We'll go back to the controller, which we talked about was Betty
Yee.
Betty Yee.
And she's going to be up against Constantinos Roditis.
Yeah, that's a hell of a name.
That's a name, yeah, for sure.
And then, as we were saying, the controller is a part of the State Board of Equalization, and Butte County is in the first district. There's four districts.
Four districts, but not equally spread out.
So, what I want some of y'all to do for homework today is look up the State Board of Equalization, California, and go about an eighth down the page, and you'll see a little map. The first district is about every county in California that does not either touch the Mexican border or the Pacific Ocean. It is huge.
It goes pretty much all the way down to San Bernardino area, yeah, and all the way up to, like, Weed, California.
It touches Oregon and goes down to, yeah, like you
it
said.
It touches Arizona.
Yeah, it touches Arizona, and literally that is our rural California. So our rural California is lumped into one large district, whereas District 3 is just a little bit of Los Angeles and a little bit of, like, Orange County area, I believe.
And District 4 is borders... Arizona, Arizona, Mexico, and then the Pacific, and it has San Diego. I'm assuming parts of Orange County. I'm not really good with California geography.
It's Riverside area, San Bernardino area,
Orange County.
And then District 2 is essentially most of, like, all of the coast of California
above LA.
Above LA, and then
it doesn't even reach Del Norte, though, because Del Norte, I think, is included in the rural area.
Yeah, so it's this massive geographic area for District 1, and to my knowledge, the way that they divvy up the different districts is based off of population. So
that is crazy.
So they try to get all of the populations that would be equal to each other. So almost all of rural California is equal to just a tiny little fraction of LA, a pretty good portion of, like, the southern part of California, and then the coast.
Oh, they got Malibu.
Yeah, so it'll be.
They got Malibu.
No, they do. Yeah, it'll be really interesting to see the yield of the results and which direction these different districts vote, and how, and either the similarities, the differences, the overlap, and just to be able to analyze that and see where these voters' values are and where their minds are when they come to the polls.
I feel like it's frustrating, though, living in a rural area, though, because living in Butte County is not the same as living maybe down south in a rural area. Like, there's different issues. It feels really, like, the guy that runs our discus could live down in San Bernardino but not know what goes on in Redding, California, or something like
that.
So it's just really frustrating that they lump it such a big area into our district.
Bringing that up again, these four districts look very similar to some of those maps that I've seen on splitting the state of California up into different states. And I'm wondering if they just were like, well, this map looks about good for different states? Because, I mean, I guess they're trying to get similar populations. But, yeah, like, someone in San Diego is living way different than someone living out in Barstow, which is in the same district. Same with, like, us living here, and even Susanville, which is actually pretty close compared to, like, probably... any of the valley cities.
So that's down in the valley. Yeah, that's down Yosemite. All of Yosemite is included in that. That's literally, it goes down to San Bernardino. So San Bernardino, which is like where some of my relatives, that's 8 hours away. Yeah. 8 hours away is lumped into the same category as us.
Yeah. Yeah. So who was up for election in this primary was Tom Hallinan, the sole Democrat out of the four people running. He got 38.85% of Butte County, followed by Ted Gaines, a Republican, who got 32.51% of the votes. And they were basically way ahead of everyone else.
And the rest of the
by
districts,
by a margin of at least 5,000.
Yeah.
And this is weird because, I mean, Butte County's leans more Republican red, but the Democrat won this one, so I wonder how and why that came out to be that way. But
yeah, no, that's a really interesting
and a lot of the rural areas,
yeah,
are more red
that you
too.
Notice that, because even the Republicans that did win, the margin was less than 10% from what I see, which is still significant, but it's not enough to say that they won like significantly. It's not enough,
yeah,
to really lock in the vote. And down the ballot, a lot of Democrats did win pretty consistently, if you look at it, which is just interesting to see which way the county's swaying and,
yeah,
which way they want to go.
And where things are going to go in November, too, with our local city council.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And this might give you a little peek in a window into the future of what's going to happen.
Yeah.
So really quickly, we're going to do another underwriter, just briefly. Youth for Justice is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by Alternative Energy Systems, a locally owned and operated partnership providing sustainable energy for life. Alternative Energy System offers residential, commercial, and agricultural solar energy solutions. More information by calling 345-6980 or visit solarenergyforlife.com. And by Chico Sports LTD, a locally owned sporting goods store featuring bicycles, sports equipment, and apparel for all seasons since 1985. Chico Sports LTD is located in the Safeway Plaza on Mangrove Avenue and is grateful for the support of local businesses in the community. I actually got my bike fixed at Chico Sports LTD, and they're actually really cool people there, and they have this awesome cat that just hangs out at the,
yeah,
store. So
nice.
I say, yeah, go check them out.
Nice.
And, you know, always solar. Go solar.
It's a
good
cool
investment.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's cool.
It is a good investment, especially in the summer heat.
Yeah, and if you're a homeowner, ooh, you can have that AC blasting all day and still,
yeah,
get money back to the grid. So.
Isaac, let's get solar.
Too many trees up there in those woods. All right. Another primary position chosen, actually, this won't be going to the general, was Fiona Ma. She will be our treasurer for the state of California.
She handles the purse.
She got 36% in Chico or Butte County, and followed by Greg Conlon, who got 28%. So she didn't get 50% in this county, but looks like she got it in the rest of the state. So good for her.
Yeah.
Attorney General Xavier
Becerra.
Becerra. And he's the current one, too, right?
Yes. Oh,
so the incumbent. Do you know he won the state of California, or is he going to be going to the
He's going to the general with...
Stephen Bailey?
Yep.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, so they'll be battling against each other. And that's a really important position, too.
Absolutely, yeah.
So I hope...
Becerra, yeah, he won 36.29% of the vote, and Bailey won 32.57% of the vote.
Yeah.
That's Ramsey's boss.
Yeah, yeah, especially... Yeah, it is. Especially, yeah, with immigration nowadays, it's really important, and keeping California a sanctuary state, it's really important. And then locally, I think we passed over with Randall Stone and...
We haven't gotten there yet.
Okay.
We'll go through this insurance commissioner real fast. The no party preference candidate, Steve Poizner, got 48.34%, followed by a Democrat, Ricardo Lara, who got 30.41%, and they will be matching off in November.
Ricardo, Laura, sorry, you go first.
I'm just going to point out that is a significant percentage of Butte County that voted for Poitzner instead of Lotta. And I wonder why is my question, because no party preference in a rather red county is interesting to see. And by 18% like difference, that's a lot.
Yeah.
In the state, he did.
Really
he
well.
Did, yeah, he won too. So.
Yeah. And Ricardo Lotta, I actually have some experience with him. For my job, I went to Sacramento and did some, one of the policies we were advocating for with the Lung Association was the refrigerants that are really polluted, and it's his bill. So he works with the American Lung Association. Oh. He's very environmental.
Nice. All right, here's that superintendent of public instruction.
This is important.
Yeah, this is the important one, especially for youth still in school, in college, in elementary, all grades. This person is basically in charge of
schooling.
The Department of Education of California.
Yeah.
So, right, it had been Tom Torlakson.
Mm-hmm.
But he did not run this time, and the
unfortunately he was
two cool. people
mm-hmm.
who will be voting for in November are Marshall Tuck, and in Butte County he got 37.31%, and he will be going up against Tony K. Thurmond, who got 31.67%. So 37 to 31% statewide, they were very close. The third candidate down, she's already backed Tuck, but this is going to be a very close and maybe the most moneyed race this well, the most moneyed for this position ever. I mean, it's probably every year that goes by it is, but especially this one, because these two candidates, from my little research, are very similar. I'll read a quote from edsource.org's John Fensterwald. Tuck and Thurmond both say they oppose for-profit charter schools and would close those that are consistently low-performing. But they differ on important details. Tuck opposes a charter moratorium, while Thurmond favors a pause. Tuck opposes enabling school boards to reject a charter's application based on a potential negative financial impact on their district. Thurmond would condition approval on compensating a district for loss of revenue, a potentially expensive alternative. Now, we've actually talked about charter schools before
mm-hmm.
and how that all kind
of
works.
A lot in Butte County, too.
Yeah, Butte County.
It's over 12.
And from this article, I was reading, they're so similar that, like, Tuck opposes saying there will never be a charter school again, but Thurmond, he's okay with stopping it just for now. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, to me, that's basically the same, because, like, Thurmond could say, yeah, we'll pause it, and then he'll pause it for a month and then say, oh, yeah, we actually do need these charter schools, so let's let them happen. So it's like they're so similar, it's hard to even see the difference between.
So basically, if you're a charter school, you probably are kind of not feeling very not very happy right now.
What I anticipate happening is that they'll probably leave it to the counties to decide unless it becomes such a big issue, because a lot of the times they don't like to step on the toes of local governments.
Yeah.
Because they know that local governments have a little bit of influence in lashing back.
Yeah.
But I would say that the most significant determination between the difference of them, as I always say, will more than likely be their donors, who's giving money to them. And if they have any money coming from charter schools, that'll be a red flag to consider, depending on what your position is when it comes to charter schools. If you're for them, if there's a charter school donating to them, you'll probably vote for them. If you're against them and there's public institutions and public organizations, associations donating to them, you'll probably vote for that person when it comes down to the wire. But whether or not they'll make a state legislative bill or they'll pass some type of big ordinance to affect all of California,
I don't see that being likely.
I don't see them making a statute to affect all charter schools throughout California. I think the most likely case will probably be allowing counties to decide.
Yeah.
So
do you know who teachers are behind, like the teachers associations and such?
That comes to my next quote. Where Thurman falls short, however, is evidence of his willingness to take on the status quo when its comfort zone conflicts with the interests of the students. A prime example was legislation last year, AB 1220, that would have extended the number of years required for teachers to earn tenure from 2 to 3. It must be emphasized that this was not an assault by right-wingers contemptuous of public education. It was a Democratic proposal by Shirley Weber of San Diego that would have put California in line with 42 states that keep new teachers on probation from 3 to 5 years. So this is basically saying Thurmond wanted to put in was behind legislation that would make it so teachers would have to teach for 3 years instead of 2 to get tenure, meaning their jobs are pretty safe. So this would be something that the California Teachers Association would potentially and most likely not be for, because they are for the teachers and making it easier for a teacher to get tenure. And it looks like if he's for this, he's more for the students, which is, in my opinion, what we should be focusing on. I mean, teachers, I'm a substitute teacher. I'm part of this one of the unions, and I'm all for teachers, but we're there for the students. If there were no students, there wouldn't be teachers. So obviously we should go for the students, depending on them.
That's kind of nice too, because I think we were talking about this earlier with teaching, sometimes when there's, they get tenure, they can become a little bit more complacent. So it's kind of nice that they, I mean, I'm not saying that teachers all do that. I know a lot of teachers go into business because they love it, but I know that sometimes they can be, and it might be nice that they kind of have more check-ins.
Yeah.
Especially when they've been working there for a bit.
And I didn't get an idea on if this position is in charge of the college system as well, but I would assume so.
It is, because when I was reading their descriptions, one of them was talking about how they wanted free college. They wanted to do that. I don't remember which one it was, but one of them did. So this is a very important, like I said, when people talk about being apathetic in elections, these are all really important positions. Affects your education, your justice system, your money, your taxes. This is all really important, guys, our governor. So if you're listening, hopefully you're getting more educated on what's going to happen in November, and not only in November, but local elections too, because I know we have city council elections. We've been talking about that a lot too, but that's important. We got 3 seats up in November.
Let's just emphasize.
So we had a caller just now who was wondering if I had numbers on how many people actually voted and how much that was compared to how many people can vote. Now, if I'm reading this report right, it looks like 37,899 people voted in Butte County this year out of 116,657. So about 38,000 out of...
Is that the whole population or eligible voters?
Eligible voters.
Okay. So
about a third of the people voted in Butte County that were eligible to vote.
32.5%.
That's crazy low.
In Butte County, which From numbers I've seen flying around the internet, that might not even be right. That's actually higher than the whole country, I think, because it was like 25
yeah,
or something.
Yeah, I remember
like
reading
that.
The next day, because I was reading about the election, that this was a very low turnout for California in the primaries. They were very disappointed with how many people showed up. But yeah, so
that's we've got like 2 minutes, and then we'll throw on this
funky tune.
Boys song by the Shirelles, which was covered by the Beatles.
Oh, yeah. Nice. So our last 2 minutes, what do we want to emphasize? I think we should emphasize that there's still time to vote in November. I think
there's still time to like look up what to vote for in November.
Yeah, because
and to register too, isn't it? As a register, yeah.
Yeah, you can still register
so
to vote.
So there's still enough time to register to vote, to research on what is going to be on the election in November and what you're going to be voting on the ballot, and to inform yourself of the candidates, their positions, who their donors are, and what particular issues will affect you.
Yep.
And to always look at who's donating to the positions that you're going to be voting on, because that is really, really important.
Donations and who endorses, I think, also is really important.
Yeah.
But yeah, and again, in November, we also have city council seats up, so let's think about that too, because local elections also really matter, guys, as we can tell by our representation and everything like that. And definitely, we still have to vote between LaMalfa and Audrey Denton Denny, too.
Absolutely.
So that's big as well. So make sure you guys keep this energy going. There's time, but there's a lot of things to research on, and a lot of time, things can happen.
Yeah, well, this is KZFR, Youth for Justice, Moses Salgado, co-host, signing out.
All right.
Thank
peace
you
out.
You're indeed listening to KZFR 90.1 FM, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. And the opinions of the prior show and future shows that you'll hear on your people-powered radio are the opinions voiced do not necessarily represent the views or opinions of KZFR, its staff, board of directors, underwriters, or volunteers. Next up, Beatle Nation.
Hey, Jude, don't make it bad. Take a sad song and make it better. Remember to let her into your heart. Then you can start to make it better. Hey Jude, don't be afraid. You were made to go out and get her. Make it better.